Hey, everybody. It's Friday, August 21st, 2020. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio, and it's nice to wind up the week and wind it up with you and my guest today, old friend Rich Long, who's the executive director of Learning First. He's the capo del capo, so as I like to say, he runs the association that is the association of the other education associations. They have 11, I believe they have 11 members in there, and that membership totals over 10 million. Teachers and school board members, counselors, tech specialists, superintendents, principals, professional development specialists, and community communication specialists, like from NSPRA. All those associations work under an umbrella, okay, of the Learning First Alliance, and Rich Long runs that. So he's going to give us his thoughts from that high perch, I might add, Dr. Long sits on, okay, on the state of schools and learning as we reopen for fall 2020. And he's got the compendium, so to speak, of all these different thought leaders, et cetera. So we'll see where that goes. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio, and Facebook, it's Larry Jacobs or Education Talk Radio, and on LinkedIn, it's Larry Jacobs. Please go over, join our equity consortium. That is top of mind for us. We are the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Free to educators. We want your voice. Rich, I hope you join. I know you're listening right now. Okay, ace-ed.org. We want your voice involved in equity. We want it for solutions. We know there's an equity challenge out there. That's not the issue. Okay, an accessibility issue, I might add. That's not the issue either. The thing is to get these things fixed, and that's what we're looking to do. So please put your two cents in. We really want to hear from you over at ace-ed.org. And to get to solve all this, one, two, three, we have the amazing Dr. Richard Long. I'm spinning. There he is. Hi, Rich. Larry.
Hey, Larry. How are you doing?
I'm fine, buddy. We're both still alive in the midst of all this. And are you still in West Virginia, or I'm obviously here in Maine?
Right now I'm in Arlington, Virginia, and heading back to West Virginia to help for the weekend.
Good.
It is beautiful here in Arlington this week. We don't have the normal humidity, so it's really quite rare. But you know, there's lots going on. And the schools are, of course, you know, trying to, the issue you raised here about equity and access are it's a top of the mind. And it's really good that you're collecting ideas and solution sets because,
Please,
you know,
join up, Rich. Please go over to the website, ace-ed.org. Join up and encourage your members. Some of them are already members. So please continue ask your membership to join. We'd love it. And we love your points
of
view.
Well, good. Yeah, well, it's, you know, a lot of people don't, we have a big community in education. And there, one of the things the pandemic is pointing out to our associations, and they're sharing much more about this, is the richness of thought, the complexity of thought that's going on trying to solve these enormous problems that schools and children and families are facing. And we're finding that the more we listen and the more we engage across our organizations, but also within our organizations, that we're breaking down some of the barriers that separate us geographically. And you know, some of it is that, you know, people are just, you know, working in classrooms and in school buildings. But we're finding that there is a deep vein of ideas, and that, you know, we're only looking, you know, the beauty of it is we only have to call out the ones that are really, really good. So, you know, and it's an iterative process.
Right.
You know, you put an idea on the table, I add something to it, somebody else adds something to it. And then all of a sudden we get yes, keep going with that collecting of information.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very helpful.
And you know, I'm going to say what I said a minute ago. It's what we're trying to do, and you'll be so helpful with this. We know what the issues are, okay? And the collecting of information is so very important. But what we need now, in our opinion here at the consortium, okay, is solutions. We want to know what's working, okay? Because we all talk about it continually, about equity, about accessibility, you know, anything you could think of under those giant umbrellas, okay? Now we got to really get into it. And we learned that we were talking about all this before the pandemic, okay? And then the pandemic, boom, hit, and all of a sudden we realized we've been talking about it too long. Okay, we really got to make some action on it, and that's what we're all trying to do. You, I might add, and your group included, and your group is wonderful. Learning first.
Well, that's very kind of you. We are.
I mean it.
Dedicated to, and we speak of equity as a bedrock of why we're in this business, and it's something that
we are.
Right. Well, we're also struggling to figure out our own prejudices, the limits that our structure has placed on us, you know, by way of, you know, why is this building here and why is that program there type of thing.
Yeah.
But also, too, you know, why do we have a majority of white teachers, and what do we need to do to get more people of color?
I would love the answer to that one. Boy, would I love the answer to that one. Okay.
Well,
and, you know, it's funny. I got to tell you, I went to school. This is 10,000 years ago. Went all through school in Philadelphia. And not elementary school, okay? But starting in junior high back then, 7th grade through 12, I had a lot of African-American teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even something we thought about. And I've said this before on the show. They were just our teachers, okay? And you know, in fact, probably my two favorite teachers, Mr. Barrick and Mr. Pierce, okay, were both African American, all right.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't something we thought about. And over the years, that seems to have, not to me, but it seems to have disappeared, okay. And I keep hearing we need more and more, and I don't know why there aren't more and more. There was good roots in that soil, and I don't know, you know, what happened. I don't know what happened. Okay.
Well, some of it is cost. Some of it is remuneration that is makes it difficult for a you know, family to live off of the income of a teacher, one income type
of
thing.
Right.
But there's also just systemic issues. You know, we lose almost half of our teachers within 5 years of their starting.
Yeah. But we should have a pipeline of 5,000 more coming through. That's the problem.
Yes.
It's the pipeline.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also a respect, apparently, you know, that teachers perceive that they're not respected, that also in the last 20 years we've had a host of policies designed to, you know, the hope of making a difference. But one of the unintended consequences was to degrade the decision-making power at local buildings and classrooms.
Yeah.
And we've emphasized, you know, accountability testing, which is not useful to change instruction for individual students. And so, you know, we have this push-pull. We need a lot of discussions about why we need accountability and why we need other forms of assessment information. This current pandemic is highlighting all of those challenges we have. And in fact, one of the other thing we are talking about in Learning First is looking for ideas, solutions, models where they're not just filling in for the crisis that we have, which is deep and just incredibly difficult for school people to manage because the parameters are changing so rapidly.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we have a tendency of when crises occur, solving that problem. And then that becomes the long-term solution.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is not the formula for success. That keeps you in the same spot.
That's right.
And so, you know, like the question we're talking about today, what is the state of schools? Well, they're changing. And some of the changes are, some of the change is an acceleration of things that were going on already. And others of them are an exacerbation of for a long time.
Yeah. I lost a little bit of that sentence. You said an exacerbation of. Got to say it again.
Of the problems we've been facing for decades. And so, you know, it's the not quite the yin and yang, but it is it is part of the process that, that we need to identify. I mean, you know, when you if we were doing this talk last August, we would be talking about back to school and instruction and, you know, what the goals. Now we're talking about the mission of schools is, number one, is how do we keep kids safe and the staffs safe? I mean, that's a pretty profound change. And then the second level is how do we feed the kids and indeed the families that need to be fed, that get you know, one or two meals a day,
which has become, as you say that, I want you to think about that, and I believe me, I understand this. It has become the role of the schools. Now think about that. Feeding families
and,
has become the role of the schools. Wow.
And
I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying if we just stop and don't take that statement for granted for a second, you realize how what's going on, okay, and how what are the challenges we face. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, Rich.
Go ahead. The reality of that is the schools, back when they did the emergency shutdown, that within a week – They switched their feeding programs and distribution programs. Their estimates that the schools are feeding 40 million people.
Right. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. And then you get to
say something. I got to stop you for a second because what you said a few minutes ago, you said the first role of the schools. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the way I heard it. The first rule of school is we want to keep the kids safe and the faculty safe.
Right.
Then you said, and then we have to feed all these people, which I agree with.
Right.
Okay. But it's interesting. The role of schools is actually to educate people. It's amazing. You didn't say that, and I was agreeing with you. Then I thought about it for a second. Okay. The whole role of schools is changing.
It is, and then my list of things. Then the third thing we're trying to do is to understand how to enhance the well-being of kids. Part of safety. Yeah, because over the years we've been talking about various crises. Before this pandemic hit, the country was dealing with the opioid issue. And also the growing suicide problem.
Still is.
Yes, it is. Yeah, we have essentially a trifecta of emotional issues to deal with in the school business. So well-being, because we know that for the whole thing to work, it's the relationship that the teacher, counselor, administrator has with the student, the parents, and members of the community. That then get to what people would have said is the prime purpose of schools, and that's for learning to occur. And that is, in reality, our fourth level, issue that we're trying to deal with in the midst of trying to figure out, is it 6 feet or is it 3 feet? Which mask works well? These are very, very,
I'll give you another one on that. How are we going to keep kids in northern climates safe when all the windows are closed come October, November, December in older schools? okay, that don't have brand new ventilation systems. And that's
right.
Going to be a real mess. Going to be a tremendous mess.
It is going to be very, very difficult to do that, because we know that people would say, well, the scientists don't really know. Well, they do know some things as fact, and they are certainly working to give us more facts. They're certainly giving us informed judgment.
Yeah.
And I prefer their informed judgment to my guessing. And it's, we are going to, as a community, going to have to be tolerant of the fact that it does take a little bit of time for knowledge to occur.
Rich, I got to ask you this, and you'll know this. I got to ask you this, all right? And you brought it up when you were planning the show, but I really want to just talk about this for a second. We're saying all these things, and we expect school to do all those things you said. We got to take care of the kids mentally, social, emotionally, however you want to say that. We got to feed the kids. We got to teach the kids. Okay, we got to make sure they're safe with all kinds of new equipment inside the schools. All right, Rich, I got to talk to you about this budget. Okay, so many people are out of work. School, they can't pay their taxes. That's what schools live on. Okay. What's going to happen with budgets? Okay, how do we do all this? Okay, with less budget, we need to do more, and we need to do more with a lot less. And I got to have your thoughts on that.
It is the less is profound. Depending on exactly where you are, we're looking at between 5% and 30% cuts in budgets. And some of it might be for some districts right now. And in fact, their state legislature is meeting right now to redo their budgets.
Yep.
And what most people don't understand or know is that 45% of state budgets go to health or education. And under this, the states have lost an enormous amount of revenues. So they have to cut back. So, of course, they're going to cut back almost all areas. And you can't cut back in health right now because you need to replace all those masks. You need to be hiring more nurses if you can find them. And so even when we look at the projections percentage-wise, it's very, very difficult. Now, some states do have some pretty deep, reserves, so that they're going to mitigate this to some extent. But this is going to go on in terms of revenue shortfall for years.
Yeah.
So we're looking at we know that schools are struggling to buy the equipment they need to function. They need to have essentially even simple things like more buses or more bus routes.
That's so simple.
Because you can't put 30 kids on the bus anymore. So that means you need, you might be able to put 10 or 12. So you need two or three runs to do the same thing that you used to do before. I heard about one school that's changed their very dense community, that their buses used to pick up 1 mile out. Now they're going to pick up 3 miles out in order to manage.
Oh, wow. Parents are going to get the kids to the school within 3 miles. Is that the deal?
Right. And they're estimating that that's 450 cars going to be dropping off kids. Now, I don't know about you. The school you went to, but 450 cars are, an enormous, an amazing amount of time to, even the simple stuff, so you can't just say, logistics count. Omar Bradley is credited with saying, General Omar Bradley, from World War II.
Yes, I know who he is. I don't know how much of our audience does. I hope they know who Omar Bradley is. Okay? He was the good guy in the movie Patton, okay? Just so everybody
right.
knows.
Carl Malden played his part.
Yeah, exactly.
But he said Amateurs talk strategy, professionals talk logistics. And it's, you know, all of this is, you know, the question of money is a question of, you know, like if you had a building before of 20 teachers and you've just, and you know, 20 support staff, let's say, and you've just lost 15-20% of your funds, and people are, you know, 60-70% of your fees or of your budget, you know, you're going to be cutting people. The other thing is that, that American AASA, the superintendent's organization, they estimated a couple of months ago that for all of the cleaning equipment we need, because, you know, you got, you know, we got to send people in to, you know, clean desks and have masks and all this stuff. It's $900 per kid per year. We have 50.7 million kids. So the where do we get that money? And that's, that goes to, you know, kind of our number one issue. You know, we got to keep the kids safe. So it's the dilemma of this. And what schools are trying to do is engage in more discussions with their communities. The ones who are doing this very, very actively are, you know, we're hearing, you know, much more about, you know, the phrase we call it is engagement, stakeholder engagement, which is a pathetic set of words. But it's to describe, you know, one of these changing events that is increased in speed and depth. From before, this was a trend that was happening before. We were seeing the federal government put it into the revision to their key law on elementary secondary ed, and then the states have implemented it. And frankly, in some places, it's you know, did we meet with this community checkbox? Other places, what they're finding is, you know, you get people around the table. You know, you say, look, we're dealing with this crisis and this is what we're thinking of doing. How does it sound? You know, and, you know, you find that, like, okay, yeah, we got 450 cars showing up. Okay, what is the way to stagger this? And, you know, somebody says, well, you know, a bunch of us, you know, work over here. Let's talk to our employer about staggering there. You know, these are things that when communities are engaged become solvable, approachable problems. If you're sitting in your bunker trying to figure out, you know, what's the best thing to do all by your lonesome, you know, that doesn't work as well. So we're seeing, you know, a much greater engagement across the board. And, of course, you know, some of this is also mitigated. I mean, if you're in a rural district and you're saying to people, you know, we got to have this meeting and you know, and this discussion and, you know, these in, you know, you don't have Zoom or the broadband to have Zoom. I mean, now, you know, again,
now
it points out to this other, you know, another inequality and another barrier to what we know we need to do.
Yeah. I got to tell you, Rich, I forgot to mention to you, and I owe you a thank you. You were the one who introduced me to Chris Seeley, right? Who's the American Psych. And I wanted you to know he's a delightful guy. And we've talked a few times, and he's going to be on the show on this coming Tuesday at 9 a.m.
Their program, the American
Talk about that, because you were talking about mental health. I didn't want to blow over this topic. You were talking about the mental health, the social-emotional learning, the mental health of both children and faculty and staff. Okay, amidst all this. And Rich introduced me to a gentleman named Chris Seeley at the American Psychiatric Association. They have a program for well-being at schools. Just speak to that, Rich. Yeah.
Their program
just lose track
is, what Chris is going to talk to you about is a revision
of a program that they've had for more than 10 years that is heavily endorsed by many of the groups in like LSA, or the American School Counseling Association, is a member. And they, you know, when I first brought this up to them, they said, "Oh yeah, this is really good. We've been, you know, trying to promote this for years." But what they do is they have created, they've worked already with 80,000 teachers and administrators and impacted 10 million kids. So their ideas are not, "Hey, wouldn't this be fun to try?"
This isn't new stuff. This is good stuff.
Yeah.
This is real stuff.
Yeah, this is.
Let me just say, it's professional development for educators about the mental health, of students and your colleagues. And along with Chris will be a teacher, an educator, a math teacher who learned the program from Janesville, Wisconsin. Okay, so this isn't like for school psychologists. This is for everybody. Okay, and everybody can thank Rich Long for introducing me to Chris Seeley. I appreciate it. Okay, it's good stuff. Hey, Rich, I got to ask you something else because you talk to all your groups. Okay, and I know a lot of your groups aren't specifically curriculum oriented, like NCSS Social Studies. They are not. They would not be a member of Learning First because it's a little too specific, but you do work with AASA and that kind of ASCD, that kind of group. And what I wanted to ask you, and this is a key thing because amidst everything we're talking about, okay, George Floyd and Breonna Taylor were basically murdered, okay? And this brought on a whole social justice, anti-racism ideas for curriculum. Okay, for schools nationwide. Okay, so not only do we have to do all these other things that we've been talking about for 27 minutes here, okay, we have to look at curriculum and we have to perform a social justice function. Okay, and Rich, have you, has LFA talked about this at all?
Yes, this is part of our equity discussions, and it's both personal. We've had conversations, very frank conversations among ourselves about fears, about poor understandings, and our members have convened their own discussions internally about the blindness my blindness, for example.
Everybody's blindness. Don't blame yourself. Everybody. Don't blame yourself.
Well,
we have to acknowledge
our own weaknesses and blind spots. This idea that the fellow who was asking the woman to put her dog on a leash and
the guy in New York, the bird watcher, that gentleman.
I've talked to people of color just about the murder is and the rampant murder and the statistics of this. But you find out how deep this is.
The bird watching incident was classic. That was classic.
Yeah,
that
and apparently this goes on all the time as well. I mean, so it's not just, the police. The police are reflecting the society. And the problem is not within our stars. It's within us. Mm-hmm.
I would quote. Did you make up that quote? Because I could. That's a very good quote. Right, very good.
Yeah, I think that guy might get some fame somewhere. I don't know.
Right. We really have to confront this. So, on top of everything else, what are your thoughts about? I mean, we have to confront it in schools. Are you hearing we're doing that? And again, you work with superintendents. You work with school board members, okay? School board members are particularly, they can be, more political, okay? And there's a political challenge out there. What do you hear?
Well, the challenge right now, of course, is we have a concept that all problems are yes or no, right or left, black or white. And in reality, in order to function as a society, we need to be able to talk about the gray spots. You know, where things are, you know, where perfection hasn't happened, but also to where we can find and build solutions. And the environment we have right now, like, for instance, open schools. I mean, yeah, I've heard some superintendents in a couple of rural states talk about that in their county, they've had no cases, COVID cases, in, you know, two plus months. Now, you got to say, you know, that's different than where I'm standing right now, Arlington, Virginia, where you know, we're finding a increase in the number of COVID cases identified on a daily basis. Plus, the density is different. And one of the things the medical people are saying to us in trying to very politely teach us about probabilities is that it's, you know, it's how much contact you've had with how many people over what intensity. And that determines what your risk factors are. And so the fact that we have, you know, different political leaders talking about opening or not opening, this isn't a yes or no question. And fortunately, I think many of the governors have come to that conclusion independent of political party. And you know, the fact that the president is still talking about this and is...
Drink some bleach. Yeah, to take care of it.
Again, we're putting it at almost any problem we face. If you put it as an either or, you're going to guess wrong.
Yeah, you are indeed. And by the way, one group that's also stepping up, and I got to give them some credit, and I'm sure you know this, are the state superintendents. Okay, the ones I've talked to are really trying to put things together statewide. And none of them have the panacea, and everybody's experimenting, but they're doing good. They're trying. I know they are to do good things. Okay, so you got
actually,
the governors working with state superintendents. Yeah,
There is an enormous amount of goodwill going on.
Yeah, there is.
People are struggling. You know the fact that, you know, roughly the estimate of 40 million. People being fed through the schools when the schools are closed. And this happened within weeks of closing the door is amazing.
Yeah. It's amazing that needs to happen. It's amazing it happened. We fed them.
Right. And at the same time, we are painfully aware that in this, the distance learning, you know, throwing that switch, that we have, you know, tens of, in some of the bigger school districts, a high percentage, you know, 30% plus minus of some degree, that we're not in contact with at all.
Yeah,
we're painfully aware of that. And so part of what we're trying to do is while people are struggling to solve the crisis of today, trying to figure out what did we learn from the distance learning that we had before, that we had in the spring, and to change and learn from what went right and what went wrong. Because, frankly, like Psychology Today just published a piece that talked about that there is, you know, like 25% of the kids, roughly, who are actually feeling pretty good doing distance learning at home. They feel less stressed.
Well, sure.
They feel more productive. They feel like they're learning. So, and again, it's not, you know, somebody says, well, it was a disaster.
It has not been a disaster by any stretch of the imagination. I don't believe it's been a disaster. These kids will learn. Given the opportunity, kids will learn. Okay.
Well, but we need to do better.
I do believe
we know that.
We just have to manage that. Okay, and that's what we kind of learn to do, all right? And I believe kids will learn. And one of the things, we got to go in a couple of minutes, but I believe, okay, that the more rigorous curriculum we give to every kid, okay, especially now to keep them engaged, they will rise to the occasion.
Yes,
I believe that.
A high percentage of the kids will do that. A high percentage of the kids.
Yeah, I believe a very high percentage. They won't let you down.
And a high percentage, we need to figure out, too, which of those kids. And then which are the kids who need to be hugged? And in order
you need a hug,
Rick.
Isn't that what this is about? Do you need a hug?
Well, we all need hugs, that's for
okay.
sure. But the reality of this, Larry, is that we can focus our resources to even mitigate that if we have the right data, have the ability
yeah.
to sift through it and then allocate our resources appropriately.
And you just said the key word. You just said the key word, which is data. We need data, okay? And
right.
you work
right.
with the data, and that's what makes the difference. Education is a science. It is not an anecdotal experience, okay? It is a
correct.
Science. And you can quote me like that Stars quote you did. You can quote me on that one. Okay.
Okay.
We got to go, my friend. I love talking to you. We'll do more. I'll send you an email and we'll schedule in our next show. We'll check back in October when things are popping here. Is that good?
That's good for me.
Yeah,
take care, Larry.
Good for me too. Rich, you too. Be safe. Have a good weekend in West Virginia and stay safe in Arlington, okay?
You as well in Maine. Bye-bye.
Thanks, buddy. Bye. Hate to cut him off. We got to go, though. What can I tell you? Hey, that's Rich Long. Rich, Dr. Long, is the executive director of the Learning First Alliance. That's the Association of Education Associations. That's at learningfirst.org. And they tweet at Learning First. And I'm telling you, they are a terrific organization. Obviously, look who their executive director is. Okay, we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. We'll tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. Go over to ACE, you too, Rich. Go over to ace-ed.org, all right, ace-ed.org. Help us along. Get involved. We want solutions all about equity. We are the American Consortium for Equity in Education. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We have another show coming up with the National Association for Gifted Children. But if I don't talk to you for that one, have a good weekend. Thanks for listening.